through the streets of Chignik in the spring. He was with a second wolf and eating good. Better get on the phone to Fish and Game. Ah, ooh, gray wolves of Chignik. If you hear him hollering around your school door, better not let him in. Really nice teacher got mutilated late last week. Gray wolves of Chignik again. How gray wolves of Chignik. Since coming from McGrath, where moose have once again become a staple. Better stay away from him. We'll bring the choppers in. Our boys are more than able. How gray wolves of Chignik. How some new guy's running the machine. He's after the gray wolves of Chignik. I hear all the antis thinking he's kind of mean. Smoking the gray wolves of Chignik. I saw Priscilla drinking a soy latte at the border game. Her hair was perfect. Nope. Gray wolves of Chignik. Gray wolves of Chignik. Draw blood. Gray wolves of Chignik.
Oh, yeah. Roger McGill and Gray Wolves of Chignik. Hey, this is Craig with the Outdoor Show. Welcome to it. It's 12:30 on a Saturday in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm not in Fairbanks, Alaska, but that's beside the point. I was thinking a lot about wolves the other day, and I thought, it kind of ties into a lot of things about Fairbanks, our independence, the federal overreach, and that song was written, that was 16 years ago. That was 2010 when the school teacher in Chignik got attacked by wolves. They found her body, didn't know what happened for a while, and then they determined the wolves had drug her off the road when she was jogging in the morning or going for a walk or something. But it was an unfortunate situation there, but Fish and Game was under the leadership of a good buddy of mine named Corey Rossi, who did a fantastic job at Fish and Game. Of course, the antis hated him, but you see that with national politics now. But anyway, a lot of interesting things that were going on around then. There was a lot of areas, even in Fairbanks, there was a lot of dogs being attacked by wolves. There was a lot of pressure to do some predator control, predator management, as we call it. And the Fish and Game Department has actually been really good issuing permits and overseeing that program over the years. But we've kind of, a lot of things have affected our ability to do that. You've got issues like the cost of fuel, airplane fuel, even in the villages, snow machine fuel parts, all that. People used to go out and take extended trips, extended trips to do some wolf hunting, and not as much anymore. So price of beef and everything else, it's a big advantage if you can at least curtail the growth of the predators. And you know, there's states that are doing a really good job of that. Some of the states, Idaho, Montana, they've got bounties. They got, you know, conservative Republican governors, most of those states, and they have a different programs that are overseen by the agencies, the state agencies, who, of course, they're pushing back like we are on federal overreach. They try to do the right thing. They try to encourage some predator control because, you know, the antis are always wanting more and more wolves, and it makes it real difficult for, you know, for folks to, if you got a farm and the wolves are attacking your livestock, or if you just, you know, in an area where they've kind of devastated some of the deer and elk population, you know, a lot of people use for food. It's an example. There's lots of examples of it, but Idaho, I think, has got the, I think it's Idaho that has the bounty up to $2,500. I think most of them are about a grand, for wolf. And what it is, you actually, save your receipts for things like, a rifle, ammunition, a four-wheeler, and you get reimbursed for up to $1,000, $1,500, $2,000, whatever. I think it's based on the different areas that need predator management, so they elevate those numbers in areas that are in desperate need of it, and then it's at least $1,000. I don't know if there's a limit, one per person, I don't know, but at least the state is aggressively incentivizing those that do take the effort to try and correct that problem. Of course, the wolf lovers across the country are up in arms over that. That's just the way it is. That's the way they've always been. Most of them are vegetarians, in my opinion. we in Alaska, I've got a couple of interesting little wolf stories that I think are good. I'll make it public now. I haven't made this public before, but this was probably around 2012, I'm guessing. We put on the Tired Iron Snow Machine Race every year. Dave Weaver and Kurt Huff, myself, and a bunch of others. It's the one at Urban. And this Urban Rahoy was around for this one. He had an old 65 Polaris. And we decided to hold this one out on the flood control project. It was the only year we did it. And it was a fun run. It was the only time I actually raced in it. I always was the MC and one of the organizers, too busy to run the sleds, but I had a ball until my sled seized up. I didn't have it jetted quite rich enough for the temperature that dropped that morning. But anyway, that's beside the point. The wolf part of this story is a buddy of mine, I'll remain nameless, a trapper, came to me a few days before the Tired Iron Race and asked if I was going to be running in it. And this guy traps out of Manly area and Minto, that kind of area. Anyway, he had just trapped a wolf, and it had a brand spanking new National Park Service collar on it. And he says, "Hey, I got something I'd like you to wear during the Tired Iron." So he went to his truck and got this collar, and legally, or I don't know if it's illegal, it's ethically, whatever you want to say, according to the federal authorities, you're supposed to turn the collar in if you find it, or if it's on a wolf, and I think they give you $25 or something. These are $2,500 collars. Anyway, this collar was given to me to put in a snow machine, and I immediately chose Urban Rahoy, who was 98, 97 at the time, and we put in the trunk of his Polaris Star, and he ran, or Mustang, what was it? I forget what, he's got a 65. He ran it every year, but I think it runs about 20 miles an hour. And he was doing laps, 4-mile laps, with this live wolf collar on, was going around and around and around the track. And of course, the feds were looking at this collar going, "What is a wolf doing running around the North Pole track?" And so the next day, after that race, I was going up the Good Pasture over on Snow Machines with a buddy. So I said, well, I'll grab it. I'll take it with me. Now, I had it in a bag in my house. And I remember them telling me, if you let it sit like for 6 hours without moving, then the authorities that are tracking it just assume the wolf is dead because they don't sit for more than 6 hours, 8 hours, whatever it was. So every time I got up to go to pee at night, I'd take the bag with me and go over to the bathroom. So at least it was moving. Anyway, I could just see these parkies scratching their head. So the next day we went up the Good Pasture on Snow Machines, took it with us, went into Volkmar Lake, played around in there, took a bunch of pictures, put it on a buddy's bulldog. A friend of mine lives in there, he's got a bulldog. We put the collar on the bulldog, let it run around with it for a while. That was fun. Came out that day. Next day I had a buddy of mine who runs an airline. I had him fly it on the, I said, what's the longest flight you got today? And he said, oh, we're going Fairbanks, Fort Yukon, Prudhoe Bay, Kaktovik, and back. I said, perfect. You see where I'm going with this? So we put it on the airplane, and that wolf traveled probably a record amount of miles. I know they can travel a lot in a day, but that was got to be a record. Came back, another buddy of mine owns another airline. Was recently in the news. He his longest flight that day was over to, I think, Hughes, Hoosley, Allakaket, and back. So the collar, the wolf collar rode on that. Now, a couple days after that, the Fish and Game is getting contacted. I know somebody that's over there, and will remain nameless, getting contacted by the Park Service saying, hey, do you know anything about this wolf collar? We've got one that's kind of gone rogue on us. I don't know what's going on with it. So they described it. Nah, they didn't know anything about that. Anyway, after that was all said and done, and this is while Congressman Don Young was still alive, we shut the collar off. We FedExed it to Washington, D.C., which is to go in his office. And I don't really know. I was going to have him turn it back on when it got there, somehow have somebody turn it on. And I can just see the, what they see? It's hanging in. Congressman Young was not a big fan of the Park Service. But anyway, that was a lot of fun. That was just one of my wolf stories. The other one was my buddy John Sturgeon, who fought the feds with the big hovercraft story. The year after he won his second unanimous decision, he's hunting with a buddy, and they were moose hunting and didn't see anything. One morning they got up, it was kind of foggy out, and they had a predator call. It was actually the day after hunting season. It was the last day. It was the 16th of the month or whatever. So they seen a wolf about 300 yards away, 400 yards, poke its head out. So they came back, they turned on this predator call, and sure enough, it got closer and it poked its head through the woods. They go to pull the trigger on this wolf, and when they shot, this mushroom cloud went up above it, and they just were like, what was that? And the wolf went down, and they walked up to it to retrieve it, and they had shot it directly through the wolf collar battery. Didn't even know it had a collar on it. But that battery exploded and made like a little Hiroshima cloud. So anyway, that's a couple of interesting wolf stories. I'm going to talk a little bit about some more federal overreach stuff in the industry that I came from, the power sports industry. But we'll take a break. This is Craig with the Outdoor Show. We will be back after these messages. Stick around.